Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Who's your favourite Scottish Zuhair, your grandmaster's sexy?
They're real people.
They're real people. We're going to use this as the opening to the podcast. They were real people. They were old WWF wrestlers. I think they might have both passed away by now. But there were two dudes, Scotty Too Hotty and Grandmaster Sexy. And Scotty Too Hotty did the worm. I know I'm speaking a weird language right now, but Scotty Too Hotty did the worm. He would run around the ring. He would do that thing where they flop on their bellies. Not they, but like humans do.
Yeah,
familiar with the worm. And he would do like a big arm drop. And they were like, they were all the rage, mate. Remember bucket hats? You just pull them off like nobody's business.
I'm kind of confused that Scotty Too Hotty wasn't called like something like the worm. If his whole thing was doing the worm.
You could have capitalized on it.
You know, because, you know,
the wriggler.
You're not worming all the time.
Never be worming all the time. Speaking of worming all the time, this is the Wind Up Podcast. I'm Scott Tilford. That's Ewan Patterson.
Hello.
Joining in, filling in a little bit for Josh Brown as he spends some time at home. All the love sent to Josh Brown. Hope he's doing well if he's listening to this podcast. But we thought we'd do a roundup of news stories, talking points in the gaming industry, as well as things that we're both playing. But the majority of this will be gaming news things, because there's lots of stuff going on, Ewan. Tons of things. There's the resurrection of Titanfall. There's Spider-Man 2 things. Oh. There's tons of stuff, but we're going to talk about stuff that we're playing first, because you've dove in to TMNT Shredder's Revenge, and the DLC for Shredder's Revenge. But before we go into that, I just want to quickly say that game is one of the best, shiniest gems of the last few years.
It's amazing.
It's kind of perfect. It's one of the best things ever made.
Yeah, no, it's a great time. I mean, when it came out last year, I think I literally played it for like 2 hours. I completed the story and then I put it aside for ages, which was really dumb, because that game goes deeper than I think I realized at the time.
Right.
But I was always looking forward to the Dimension Shell Shock thing, because I'm a big Usagi Yojimbo guy. Like, yes. I love the Turtles comics, but I love that I grew up with the 2003 Turtles cartoon, which had like an even more banging theme. Like,
Way more about these turds than I do.
People like the 1987 show, the 2003 show is kind of like, was really like edgy and like kind of took more from the original comics and the 1990 movie, which again, really great movie. Watch it if you haven't already.
Is that the one with the human suits?
Yes, it's great. I love that movie. But yeah, so Usagi Yojimbo had a cameo in that show. And he's a samurai rabbit created by an artist called Stan Sakai. And he had like a long-running series. It's all about this samurai ronin who is a rabbit in this anthropomorphic version of feudal Japan. And I was like, okay, Usagi's great. And then in the years since, I've gone and read on a bunch of Usagi comics. And then when they did Shredder's Revenge, I was like, they should totally put Usagi in this game. Because it'd be great. And when they announced Usagi was going to be in the game, I was like, oh my God, I can't wait. So I've been playing it. I've been playing the crap out of Usagi Yojimbo. And it's basically like a horde mode, but you get like different crystals and you get more unlocks and you basically make it to the end. You have to fight Shredder. And then after that, you do a whole thing where you can do it over and over again. So it's quite like a basic horde mode. I've just been playing it with my partner. And it's just really fun. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. The music is fantastic. Usagi is great. I'm having a great time.
Shout out to T. Lopes. That game's soundtrack was my album of the year last year. I know other actual like music albums came out, but I didn't care.
Mike Patton did a TMNT theme.
Yeah.
It's great.
There's a rap. There's all sorts of stuff in that soundtrack. I think with side-scrolling brawler stuff, it always gets to me when I can't line up with the enemies properly.
Yeah, no, TMNT
does it way better than most games do. Because I remember trying to play Mother Russia Bleeds, which is like a thing from a few years years ago, but it was like a really brutal, gritty side scroller. And I like the genre. Like, I love, I'm blanking on the name, Streets of Rage, and the Scott Pilgrim game and everything. But TMNT, I thought, actually finally got it right. And it is just pick up and play, just go for it. And I like when people online match with you and drop in, and then you just sort of, you are the full Turtles for a bit. And it's like, they nailed the feel in a way that I think most of the entries in the genre don't.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I really want to go back onto Scott Pilgrim again, because I remember getting that when it came out like 10 years ago, 13 years ago.
Yeah, they like re-released it.
So yeah, they did a remaster. So yeah, I'd show my partner that as well, because we're having a fun time with that. And there's also a new Broforce update.
I saw that.
Yeah.
I played a little bit of it.
Yeah.
It felt the same. Like, I mean, I remember Broforce really well. That game's really fun and it was awesome in like 2014. And then it's kind of just that again.
But it's just, I love the novelty of just playing. Like, people probably think that Broforce is really dated, but objectively, Rambro is very funny to say out loud.
Very true. Rambro, there's like Neo or Nebro or whatever he's called.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of them. But Broforce is doing pretty well. In terms of things that I want to throw in that I'm playing, F-Zero, I mean, I'm playing everything. I'm playing everything, Ewan. Baldur's Gate 3, Dead Space.
Just plugged in.
Finished Mortal Kombat 1 and 2 sittings. I can't get enough of it. But I want to throw in F-Zero 99, which is the Battle Royale. Only Nintendo would think of this. And I quite like the idea that they're taking modern game ideas, modern multiplayer game ideas, and putting them into classic titles. That we had Tetris 99, we had Mario 35, where you had a whole bunch of Marios running through the levels all at once. And now we have 100 people playing F-Zero all at once, or 99 people playing all at once. And I just love it. I love it. The only battle royale I'm ever going to care about is like something more novel than just, can you survive in a field with a lot of people? So this is great.
You described it to me as like a Gravity Rush style thing the other week, I think, was it? Or is it a completely different thing?
Might be a different thing. Yeah. There's, you fly, it's like, it's Wipeout style.
Wipeout, so that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Which is all floating cars. But yes. So F-Zero, obviously, you know, iconic spaceship racing game type thing, but they've added so many cool little mechanics, spin attacks, charge attacks, this like a highway that appears over the level if you collect enough pieces from other players that have been hit into, and you can fly over everybody, so you kind of, there's a bit of tactics to it. You're going to hang
like
back.
Like Anakin Skywalker in The Phantom Menace when he goes over the bit and jumps over Sebulba.
Yes, this is F-Zeroing and fly over everybody, but I like all the things that they've put in like that. And there's like a melee move where you can blow other players up, and because it's Battle Royale, you know you just took them out of the race. But yeah, it's very chaotic and very ridiculous, and I want people to support it so we get an actual F-Zero.
Does it, like, when you have that many people in the race, is it a bit like a crazy traffic jam?
It's insanity.
That's kind of what I want.
I love, because that's the thing, they've gone back to the guts of F-Zero, and they haven't just added this, like, you know, arbitrary mode. They've really thought it through. There's like customization you can unlock. There's no microtransactions in sight. It's all just through leveling up. Every race that you do, it designates rivals for you. So if you actually finish a race, if you manage to not get blown up, the two people above you and the two people below will be your rivals. And then if you do like a subsequent race, it'll give you XP and stuff based on whether you did better than your rivals in the next race. You're always earning tickets for the Grand Prix mode, which is like the more ranked mode, but it's just next Tuesday to just keep racing all the time. But I love at the very beginning, because obviously you have 99 races that are going to be forced onto these tiny tracks that were never meant for that many people. At the very beginning, you're all in one big row and you don't have any boost. So everyone is just like from the same, you know, the boost off the starting blocks or whatever. And when you get to the track, that's when everything just gets to complete carnage. But you can try and get ahead, or you can hang back and then figure it all out.
Do you lean out the window and yell obscenities at you? You're like,
I try and do a little spin attack thing, but you can't get too far ahead of them. But yeah, F-Zero 99, just as a little random thing I don't think anyone saw coming. If you have a Switch and you have Switch Online, it's worth just playing that. But let's dive into some gaming news, because there's lots of stuff doing the rounds. And we both watched the State of Play. That was whatever day that was on across the last few days.
What?
It all blurs together in my...
Yeah!
In my Mortal Kombat mind. But I thought we'd talk a bit about Spider-Man 2, because that was obviously one of the big show stealers in the showcase. Anyway, and we've got some quotes and stuff from Insomniac themselves. Firstly, saying that the game's length will apparently be the same as the original. That's directly according to them. And then from Insomniac's Mike Fitzgerald, he's been talking to IGN about the game's performance, and it's going to have 30, 40, and 60 FPS options, all with ray tracing. He said that they've figured out how to deliver what they feel is the right Spider-Man visuals, and they want to make sure every player is seeing that. No mode of this game has ray tracing turned off. There's no need for it.
I'm hyped.
That's kind of fascinating.
If they've managed to crack that, that's so cool, because I always skew for the if I've got not the option, I always go for performance with ray tracing. You know, because
I do now,
the best with both worlds. But yeah, if they've managed to make that work, and like there's no lag, I'm still seeing in some of the gameplay snippets the occasional stutter. But nothing like egregious. And if they can get that working in that gigantic open world, then I'm very excited.
What did you think of the what they showed so far? Is that more wingsuit stuff?
It's really good. I think it's kind of crept up on me how excited I am for this, because I've been on a big Marvel burnout period for a while now, but I adore that last game. Miles Morales was class as well. And the sequel was basically delivering everything that I think we wanted it to in terms of, you wanted Brooklyn and Queens, bam. You wanted squidgy black suit, bam.
And web wings?
Yeah,
bam.
Web wings. Oh, it's such a big win for the web
wings.
You
and Josh shouting out the web wings.
I know, exactly. And yeah, the gameplay itself, and like, it just looks fantastic. And the level of costumes as well. I'm just going to be a Spider-Man fashionista just going through all those.
Well, yeah, those costumes, I think me and you have already talked about this, like, outside of recording stuff. I feel like you can really tell which ones have been added to the game and which ones are legacy costumes.
Yeah, I think there's the newer ones have that kind of Gotham Knights over-designed kind of vibe to them. And again, I'm not shooting on Gotham Knights. I was a big Gotham Knights
some good drip.
Fan. Yeah. But the ones that have been specifically designed for the game, which have been designed by, you know, actual mainstream Marvel artists, I should say, who are doing art for the comics. They just look, there's just too much detail and stuff on them. I'd rather play something that is a bit older and is a little bit more refined. That's why the advanced suit redesign looks as good as it is, because it's got lots of nice little detail and elements on it, but it's not cramming it out the wazoo, you know?
No. Are you forking out for 19 inches of Venom?
When am I not?
I mean, I am every day long. But at the same time, those costumes put me off the fancy edition, because I was just like, I remember thinking, playing through 2018's one, and obviously Miles Morales, that I was like, you've kind of, for me, the more mainstream Spidey fan or whatever, like, I am a big Spider-Man fan. I feel like they've included everything that I would ever want to see or unlock, and obviously you're going to get all that again, and so I'm not that bothered about the extra
money. I really have wanted, my favorite Spider-Man costume of all time is the Ben Reilly Spider-Man suit. That's not the Scarlet Spider one, it's the suit that he wore when he replaced Peter Parker as Spider-Man, and it's basically like the advanced suit, but instead of the white symbol, it was like a big kind of like black spider that went all around. And I know they've already shown off the superior Spider-Man suit as well, so there are definitely some things that are on my wish list for a while that they are including here, which I'm looking forward to. But I think the thing that's going to get us all with this game again that maybe everyone's forgetting is that it's going to probably make us cry. The emotional beats they are swinging for with this, with Harry, with Miles, what they've teased here. There was some spoilerific stuff that I won't go into here that was brought up in the PlayStation blog for their write-up. I have a feeling this is going to take us to sad town yet again.
I like that how confident they are with their own take on the character. Like, I guess we'll not even do spoilers for the 2018 one, because if you haven't played that, you obviously really should. But that game carves itself out with some major decisions in regards to the characters and everything, which I know is vague. But for this one, you know, they're already out there saying Venom isn't Harry or whatever. Or they said something like, Venom's not who you think it is, or something like that.
I think I know what they're going for with this, but I will hold my my big Venom-sized tongue in case
all 19 inches of it. Put it away, you.
But yeah, you know, I think I think narratively they are in tune with the character, and it's just interesting. Like, not to make this about me, but it's kind of fun how when the first game came out, they had Peter as a young 20-something who was navigating a new job out of just coming out of uni, which at the time was kind of what I was doing. I was 23 when he was 23, and now with the new one, it's like, well, he's dealing with the passing of a loved one, and like also dealing with a new chapter of his life and going into new responsibilities and stuff. It's just weird how that sort of stuff aligns. I like having an older Peter Parker.
Same.
I like, because we grew up with the 90s show.
Yes.
You know, with the...
It's the best one.
Which is the best.
Best
one.
Riff, best, like, yeah, best depiction, best version of that character.
Yeah, and I mean, I love the Ultimate Spider-Man comics where Peter Parker is a teen as well, but I think I've had enough teenage Peter Parker to last me a while. Let's go back to the adult stuff, which is what, you know, we're getting here. And I'm also glad that all of their wardrobe is good now, because the fashion choices in the first Spider-Man game, it's very weird, but now they all have good drips, Scott.
Look, all of my wardrobe is like when Dexter from Dexter's Lab opens his wardrobe, and they're all just Metallica band shits. So I can't possibly comment on someone else's drip or lack of drip. But yeah, Spider-Man 2, shaping up pretty well. I'm specifically staying away from everything. Like, I'll watch the teasers if they're part of a state of play thing, but I haven't read anything else. So I'm just kind of going into it. This isn't informed by anything I've read online, but I think Venom is Peter Parker. That's my hope.
I'm nodding vigorously.
So I'm hoping that's the case. Only because in that the teaser before last, he said there was that stupid cringe Spider-Man 3 style line about having teeth.
They're going to change the world. I think, honestly, I could go into it right now as to why I think this happens. Mm-hmm. I mean, we could.
Not right now.
No. Okay.
We'll do some sort of Spider-Man chat.
Because I got my theories.
You
got
to keep those theories.
The corkboard with the string is right behind you.
Pointing at all the different parts of it. And we've still got another month and a bit before this comes out, October 20th. So 1 month and 2 days. But what else is going on in the industry? We've had Unity walking back their controversial runtime fee from last week. So if you didn't keep up with this, this is one of the major, let's say, game engine companies in the industry. You've heard of the Unreal Engine. You might have heard of Unity as well. Unity tried to roll out this thing called the runtime fee, where they were going to charge developers every time a customer installed their game. So immediately there was an overnight backlash, and it didn't initially account for the idea of deleting the game and reinstalling it, which is, could have become a whole new version.
Find the little stinkers out there.
Yeah, all the little stinkers. It would have, you know, become some new version of review bombing, install bombing, or whatever the hell it is. I think that's what they actually referred to it as later on anyway. But yeah, so obviously there was a whole backlash about charging the developers just to play their games. Unity last week, this happened on Tuesday, came out and said, look, we're not going to let it happen where you could reinstall the game over and over again. We've got it covered. But they still stuck to the idea of a fee based on installation, which again, you know, their stock tanked. It recovered to about half of what it was before, but they took a major hit. Now, because that controversy hasn't really abated for almost a solid week now, they've just done a full-on apology.
Can you do your best YouTube influencer apology? Apology voice for this.
Well, like, that girl that had the little strummer thing.
We're sorry.
Okay, so they were apologizing for the runtime fee, and this was posted. I keep wanting to say tweeted. I haven't accepted the reality of X, but no. they put a tweet out on Twitter apologizing for this. So they said, guys, we've heard you. We apologize for the confusion and angst the runtime fee policy we announced on Tuesday has caused. We are listening, talking to our team members, community, customers, and partners, and we'll be making changes to the policy. Thank you for your honest and critical feedback.
Oh my God, I feel like such a valued consumer right now, Scott.
I, for one, will be continuing to develop my game on Unity. That's the whole thing, though, is that the damage has likely been done to this because... Well, it's weird, right? Because you have a lot of developers who flagged across the last week that they are multiple years into development. They are kind of locked into the deals that were set in place when they started making the contract with Unity. You have other people like Massive Monster who make Cult of the Lamb joking, semi-joking, that they would just delete their game in January because they don't want to be any part of this, the way that this fee's rolled out. Unity right now are obviously like apologizing and somewhat walking it back. We apologize for the confusion and angst. They haven't really said we're not doing it. They just said we're listening, talking to our team members and everything else. This just feels like a big old cash grab because Unity has such a big portion of the market and they want to try and cash in as much as possible.
It's like if you were an indie developer working with Unity right now, even with this apology, I would be moving to something like an Unreal because it broken trust. It sets a new precedent. They've not actually explicitly said that, you know, they're reversing everything back. So, you know, even if they are, who's to say that they won't just do it again in the future when like there's less heat or whatever, you know? I think you've that could have very damaging long-term implications for Unity as an engine because if you're basically changing the terms of usage and you've already had that much of a stink caused and you're still kind of like figuring out how to respond that isn't just, oh, we are not going to do this anymore. I would just be looking at alternatives at that point.
Yeah, it's a weird, I mean, I don't know that much, obviously I don't know that much about the coding side of it, but it is kind of fascinating seeing companies like Unity attempt to sort of navigate that terrain when Unreal 5 is the big buzzword thing for the new generation and the Unreal 5 demos that have been doing the rounds with all those little... I forget the name of the modeling tech, but there's a new way that they sort of render backgrounds that's hyper detailed, looks very realistic. And you've also got a lot of the console manufacturers or third parties have their own engines at this point. Like Snowdrop is mentioned quite a lot in regards to Ubisoft. Like EA have the Frostbite engine. Like everyone's kind of moving away from the idea of just Unreal and Unity. So they're one of the only two indie pillars left. And then to get this so wrong and to still not fully walk it back. Like, I mean, I guess we'll see what happens in the next few days. They said they'll have an update in the next few days. But it's just a bad, I don't know, I mean, how to get that far. Like, it's such a terrible move. Everyone would have been telling them this is not going to work at all. There's always someone pushing it through.
We went into it on the news video, didn't we?
Yes.
It's like, it's clearly a decision made by someone who doesn't understand video games. It's like a, you know, a business type who is led a business and they've business too hard and now they don't know what they've done.
I do find that, like, it's like you have, or we have, a lot of people have this cartoonish idea of the evil business person, but they're only proven right. Like, it happens every sort of couple of months. Like, I mean, Cyberpunk's back in the news because obviously the Phantom Liberty DLC's out in like a week or so. But that game's getting, you know, its overhaul patch, like Cyberpunk 2.0 kind of thing.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Thing. And when that game was being detailed over on Kotaku, all the behind the scenes stuff about the dude, Adam Badowski, who was like, no, everyone's going to love the game, overhaul what you have. And the idea that it was originally this third person Witcher 3 style thing. And he was like, nope, Keanu Reeves wants to be in it. Let's reframe the whole story around him. Let's make it first person. And let's just change everything. There's always just someone, like you said, doing a business, like just doing the most businessy thing they could do. And it always goes wrong. It's very rare that it goes right. I can't think of a single instance, especially in modern gaming history, where things are more sort of spotlighted and found out, where someone's gone, let's do the naked business thing, and they get away with it. It nearly always goes sideways, which is a good segue, unless you have something to add to the project that
business,
works.
Mate.
It's business all year round. Because EA's Wild Hearts is apparently already dead after 7 months. That game only launched at the very beginning of this year. It was, or it is for now, EA's attempt at blending Fortnite with Monster Hunter. I don't know if you remember the gameplay footage for it.
I'm literally doing my best Jimon Honsu impression from Guardians of the Galaxy right now. When you said Wild Hearts, I went, who?
Well, that was the thing. That's very endemic of the fact that it didn't take off whatsoever. And as yet another live service game on the pile. But yeah, this thing, gameplay-wise, I guess looked promising enough. It was like an old-school, ancient Japanese kind of game, ancient Eastern kind of influences kind of game, but taking Fortnite's building mechanics and blending them with the idea of Horizon / Monster Hunter, big creatures, take them down, get the components, but you could build your way towards taking them down and everything. Just, I didn't see a single person play this. The only thing that I saw back when it came out was that the player numbers were so disastrously low, like in the hundreds. Kind of same with Immortals of Avium. That thing apparently peaked at 700 players. So EA's not making some great moves when it comes to trying to do stuff that would work for a mass audience. But yeah, a report from Insider Gaming, writing up some posts over on Reddit, says that this game is already winding down, which, does it surprise you
not
at this point?
Particularly. It's interesting because I feel like we've gotten a bunch of those Fortnite art style kind of games that come out recently, and correct me if I'm wrong, none of them have really resonated that much. And I wonder if like Fortnite now has the Fortnite style completely like locked down, and people see these imitators and like, well, you're clearly trying to tap into that kind of quirky, cartoony aesthetic, and it's just not gonna hit me.
It reminds me of when Overwatch was dominating in 2016, and it was like, yes, there were so many hero shooters that tried to take its crown, and they just couldn't do it, which is ironic or hilarious, because even Overwatch 2 couldn't do it. They couldn't make that lightning strike twice.
God, that's just most unnecessary
They're trying to do something after they announced it so many years ago. But yeah, for me, the live service stuff, like, I just feel like I said, Fortnite is the new Overwatch. It just needs to be that. It just needs to be accepted that you can't do it. There's no one's come close. Everyone that keeps trying to live service their games has failed. Mortal Kombat's interesting because Mortal Kombat 1 has a lot of live service elements in it, and the way the story goes very much segues into the live service component, which is something that I'm still, jury's kind of out on. I'm like, because it's Ed Boon and because it's NetherRealm and because there's a lot of like love and care in that IP overall, I hope they can pull it off. But the overall, the invasions mode, that has so much potential to just go sideways. Mm. And the game does have premium currency and does have rotating storefronts and everything. Right now, as I play it, like I finished the story mode in like two sittings. I'm loving it, but it's one of those things where you can see the Warner Brothers tendrils because the WB, like they're public enemy number one. They just kind of, for a WB, a W named company, they cannot stop catching L's for the amount of stuff they keep doing wrong. And I think, like I said, you can kind of feel the tendrils getting in there a little bit. Obviously, the history of Mortal Kombat 12, or now Mortal Kombat 1, was crossed over with Injustice 3. And it was, they were sort of told, you know, prioritize this. And at least that was the rumors, that was the leaks and stuff, that they could have done Injustice, but they were told to do Mortal Kombat instead. And to my perspective, I think they want to get as much money back as possible. And it's like, let's monetize the living F out of Mortal Kombat, because yeah, it's like positively received in a sea of otherwise quite sour stuff.
That wouldn't surprise me. NetherRealm is the one non-dysfunctional gleaming gem in Warner Brothers kind of arse at the minute. Mm-hmm. Every other thing, like whether it's Suicide Squad being delayed for ages, or you know how long it took to get Gotham Knights out or whatever, and then obviously you had the fallout of Shadow of War from years back. Mm-hmm. It just... Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he killed that thing dead.
It wouldn't be surprising to me if they're literally like, "Well, we need you guys to really, you know, come on the clock's ticking. Come on, this Lou Bega promotion for the Toonami Kids WB Snow Jam is going to pay for itself. I need you to get on this."
It's just, it's one of those things where it's just so naked. Like I said, it's so cartoonish. You see the naked live service chasing dollar, and it only keeps failing. I only mentioned Mortal Kombat because it has the potential to have lots of overpriced stuff or lots of premium currency stuff. I think they learned their lesson from MK11. When they brought in all the easy fatality stuff, or they capitalized on it, was in MK10. But overall, Wild Hearts is another one on the pile, alongside Babylon's Fall, or assumedly alongside the Suicide Squad game. It'll be a miracle if they pull that back around.
That could be gearing up to be the biggest disaster of next year.
Right now, complete honesty, I don't see it working at all. I think it'll be another one of these. I'll be amazed if it lasts a year. Mm. Because my gut feeling was always that Suicide Squad wasn't it in any form anyway. Mm-hmm. It was always DC going like, got into the galaxy's big, what have we got? Okay, Suicide mm-hmm. Squad. I just don't see it.
Yeah, I fear.
I feel nothing but fear. But we'll see how that stuff shakes out. I guess a year from now, we'll know. Maybe they'll be able to... I can just literally copy and paste this and replace the world's Wild Hearts with Suicide Squad and see what happens. But let's do something positive, which is the Titanfall 2 is back.
Woo!
Titanfall 2 swinging in on the grappling hook itself. This is after 7 years of matchmaking issues and fluctuating player base numbers. EA/Respawn have put out a new patch that's overhauled the game. Now, I love Titanfall 2. I've played it a hell of a lot. I literally think it is the best first-person shooter ever made. I'll just put that down. I'll just put that on the table. I loved every single thing about Titanfall 2, and I think it's the kinetic feel to the multiplayer, the wall running, the grappling hooks, the way you build your character, and the loadouts and everything. It was just so good. It was so crispy perfect, and I loved it. However, I always thought that it was the player-based numbers being lower that meant I wasn't matchmaking. I didn't realize it was a coding issue, a netcode issue. That was why, apparently, multiple platforms were struggling. I always thought Titanfall 2 was the victim of that release schedule in between Battlefield and Call of Duty. But now that it's been fixed, people are reporting across Steam and PlayStation and Xbox that matchmaking is instant. And there's more to this in terms of overall Titanfall stuff.
Yeah.
But thoughts, Ewan?
I think it partially was what you said there. There was that player-based issue. I know in the months following the game's release, there was huge, huge hacking problems, especially on the PC side of things, where you basically couldn't get in because cheaters were ruining everything. There was like DDoS attacks against like EA servers that basically rendered Titanfall 2 unplayable for years. Mm-hmm. And there was like private server campaigns that people basically put together to get it playable and working on PC. So the fact that this has finally been fixed after so long, it's a huge relief because that game is fantastic. And the multiplayer, And we talk about the single player for Titanfall 2 all the time because it is a fantastic single player mm-hmm. campaign. If you want a reason why Respawn, one of the best devs working right now in terms of level design, like the stuff that they pull off with the sense of movement, shooting, everything, incorporating the Titan is incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
But the multiplayer itself, it translates so well. You know, so much great meta-narrative potential there where, like, you go through, like, onto the map, and then you steal another Titan's like battery, and then you take that and you put it in your Titan, and then you gotta like get someone hijacks you, and you gotta eject and blow things up. It is just fantastic, and I'm glad that things seem to be looking back up for that game again, because even if you've whether you're revisiting it or you haven't played it yet, like go and experience this, because it would be a huge shame for people who never got to play Titanfall 2 in 2016 to actually now get the chance to play it. I think it's on sale on Steam at the minute.
Probably, it's nearly always on sale anyway.
25,000 players were playing it like over the weekend, so Titanfall 2 comeback is on, baby.
I hope so. I mean, I'll throw in here that alongside this, a set of numbers over in Apex Legends, a set of coded numbers, have been decoded to reveal release dates for Titanfall 1, 2, and Apex Legends. So fans think that, why are they telling us about release dates if we're not going to be teasing Titanfall 3 in the future? Apparently, Respawn were 10 months across development, into development, when they, you know, the games didn't go forward, EA weren't a fan of it at the time or whatever, but the plan was always to do a Titanfall 3. Obviously, like we've just said, the general reaction to Titanfall 2 was extremely positive when people actually got to play it. So there is a groundswell there of like, oh my God, just do the next one and take full advantage of the new consoles.
I'm curious to see how much of Apex Legends player base would plug into a third Titanfall game. Because obviously it's set in the same universe. Because I tried Apex Legends. Like, I think the gunplay is fantastic, but like, I'm not a battle royale guy. I can't get away with it. But maybe Apex Legends' success, maybe they sell it to EA as in, well, even if this fraction of the player base comes across, you know, I think there's like 500,000 people still playing Apex Legends on PC. If they're able to even get a fraction of that audience across for Titanfall 3, maybe that would justify it numbers-wise. I would be so chuffed to have another one of those games. Just go bigger, better. Just want to mech fun.
Give me mech fun. I feel like this is really, it just proves that the live service model, the general business approach the Wild Hearts has, where you launch with premium currencies and loot boxes and that whole, here's a whole platform, guys, and you haven't earned the time first. Like, you could put in, I don't want them to, but you could put in some sort of monetization element in Titanfall 2 and make it free to play, and it would be a really solid live service game because it's earned its stripes first. Yeah. And it's like, that's what they need to do a lot more of.
I'm totally not against premium currencies and premium cosmetics and games that are free to play, because DLC has to get made somehow. Yeah. They got to keep the lights on somehow. So as long as it's not impacting things gameplay wise and there are still opportunities to acquire fun cosmetic stuff without buying it, then that's chill with me. I think that I'd be totally fine with Titanfall 2 going free to play and having that aspect to it, but I wouldn't want to lose that at the expense of a single player campaign, because I would love to have more of that lore and go back into that and move away from the irreverence of Apex Legends.
That was the thing I always hoped, and I'm hoping this is true. I guess we'll see if they do announce a Titanfall 3, but it has kind of paid off anyway in terms of the player numbers. I always hoped when they announced Apex, because that when that launched, it was that overnight success. Oh my God, it's killing Fortnite. It's killing Players Unknown Battlegrounds and everything else. I always hoped that because they said it was in the Titanfall universe, I was like, okay, you do this, you place your bets on the Battle Royale thing, you stimmy your whole player base, and you tap into what the kids want to play, and you bring them back across into Titanfall, and maybe this was the master plan all along. I don't know, and I don't know how many of the Respawn staff have been there the whole time. Like, Jason West is still there, and it's like, you have some of these people that came across from Call of Duty Modern Warfare. It's why Titanfall plays so well, and I just hope they kind of know the industry well enough to be able to plan that much in advance.
It's such a dream, because you could really have, like, obviously Overwatch was huge for years and it's kind of just completely fizzled away now. You do something like Overwatch, obviously not make it a hero shooter. You have Apex for the hero aspect, but you have that kind of free-to-play platform to plug in where everyone can jump in, and then you can make your own pilot and you make your own mech and you go in, you do all these different game modes and stuff. It could be like a huge success, I think. My throat and my voice is killing out at the thought of the possibilities of what could occur.
Give your entire biological being over to Titanfall 2. Yeah, if you've not played Titanfall 2, obviously for me and you, we'll just say so. We're not sponsored by it. We never have been, but I love that game so much.
I'm paid for by Titanfall 2.
It is a perfect, perfect game. I'll tell you what's not a perfect, perfect game is another live service thing that's dying at the end of the month. September 30th is when Marvel's Avengers will be shut down forever. Apparently you can still play the offline modes. I'm mentioning it because it's doing the rounds in various sort of deals, sales stuff that's happening across this next couple of weeks. It's £4, Ewan. Do you want Avengers worth £4?
Such a shame, because I feel like we both agreed gameplay-wise. Like, the way the heroes played in that game was really good. Hulk felt weighty. And
To
a point, like, I Captain America was fun to play. Like, I enjoyed the actual hero gameplay of that game. It was just trapped in the most stupid, like, oh, here, we're going to make an Avengers game, and we're not confident enough to separate it from the MCU entirely, so we're going to lean into MCU aesthetics. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to have the most boring mechanic, like, enemies for you to fight. Like, I don't mind AIM. Love me a bit of AIM from Marvel Comics, but you can't make an entire Avengers game about beating up robots and drones. Like, you need to have more of, like, a threat to it. And it just... It's a shame that it's panned out this way, because I feel like I was willing... That was the moment for live service for me. If live service was going to work, it was going to be Marvel's Avengers. Mm-hmm. And it was just so repetitive and glitchy and also money grubby. And it's just... It's a shame that it panned out that way.
It's very, obviously with Square Enix on the publishing side of it, it was just like it was like the EA thing. Like, you give them the Star Wars IP in 2013 and they milked the living F out of it and largely killed themselves over it. And it took 10 years for us to get, or a lot of years, I guess 5 years and then longer, to get Fallen Order and to get Jedi Survivor and to get
and
a better version.
Battlefront 2.
Battlefront 2. And so, like, in this case, you give Square Enix the keys to Marvel, and they went, okay, character-specific battle passes, multiple premium currencies. Let's have it so that all the main mission design is ostensibly a live service thing with, like, different hubs and vendors and merchants and everything. It just felt horrible to go through. I agree with you that some of the feel of those characters was great. I just hated that they didn't have any differentiation. Like, why did Hulk have a ranged attack? Like, everyone had the same moves because they had to make everybody fit to the same levels, and it just didn't feel differentiable to go between those characters. And they took forever to put Spider-Man out, and then the Spidey stuff was just kind of lame anyway.
That was because of all the glitches and stuff. I believe that development was impacted by the California wildfires. So that obviously didn't put it on the best footing when it came out in 2020.
I think so.
Yeah. So it's, you know.
Because they pivoted into a free-to-play model. It still didn't work. They did a few free-to-play weekends. It was on PlayStation Plus. I don't know if it had a stint on Game Pass, but they got it in front of people, and it just did not catch on. And it's like I said, you have that pile of live service bodies, and the Avengers should have been a dead cert.
Probably doesn't help that we've gotten bad MCU fatigue and burnout in recent years as well. And when you've based, I mean, I know it's not an MCU game, but aesthetically they leaned into that entire thing. They used the lineup from the 2012 Avengers movie as well, which again, where I compare that to Insomniac, which was brave enough to lean in and make their own version of Spider-Man, Rocksteady, who made their own version of Batman, and you have this, which is trying to ride the coattails of something. It's just a bit cynical for me. Like, just a shame.
It was one of those things that, like you said, the timing was all wrong. It isn't helped by the weird, like, lull the MCU's in that it doesn't seem to be pulling itself out of either. But yeah, just the way that it felt to interact with the menu-based systems, the fact that story was just a precursor to the live service stuff, just that whole infinite content model, which, like I said, it almost no one can get that right.
There is a version of that game that is live service that is way better than the one we got.
Yeah.
Like, if you leaned into, like, some, like, a Secret Wars event with, like, inspired by Jonathan Hickman's comics, where you have, like, cross-dimensional rifts, and you've got, like, multiverse versions of, like, heroes and villains, and you go into battle world, and you're fighting characters like Doctor Doom. Characters people care about, like Doctor Doom.
Well, do you remember
whatever.
Before it was coming out, and it was, like, that would have been 2018, 2019, and one of the early pitches for that game was, like, yeah, live service elements and the idea of, you know, you sort of get told, like, hey, you know, Galactus is ravaging New York, beam into the New York level and join everybody and fight and that kind of thing. Just assumptions based on raid bosses, based on live service stuff that they didn't do anything with. They sort of tried to straddle that line of, like, a really
Do you want to go to the docks in New York and fight some robots again?
The same set and the same place over and over again.
Literally, like, that's a really good point. Most of the settings in that game, like, if you look at something like Marvel Ultimate Alliance or X-Men Legends, you're going all across the Marvel universe. You're going to places like Asgard, Genosha, like iconic Marvel locations. Marvel's Avengers, I think they did do some Asgard stuff eventually, I think.
I'm blank. But, that story ends
and
on
they had
Earth
Wakanda as well, obviously. They had the big Wakanda expansion. But apart from that, the first 6 months to a year of that game was just, here is a forest, here's a bit of a city, and here are some halls.
Yeah.
Which is like, come on, man. Like, you're working with, like, the architect. The DNA of Jack Kirby is running in the source materials veins, and that's what you're coming up with. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just thoroughly. It's just kind of nuts that like the time frames of these games are getting less and less. Like obviously, like you said, Avengers launched in 2020, so we've got 3 years-ish that it was at least active. Wild Hearts, like I mentioned before, 7 months. Like Babylon's Fall, like that was last year. I think that barely lasted about 3 months before Square Enix were like, it's not good enough, we're just going to can it. You would hope someone learns from this, but we'll have to wait and see. For now, though, this has been The Wind-Up. I've been Scott Tilford. That's been Ewan Paterson.
I have been Ewan Paterson.
Yeah, all 19 inches of him. And we might have him back next week. I'll see who else I can rustle up. But for now, thank you all very much for listening. And we'll catch you very soon. Goodbye.
Bye.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stephens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.